You're listening to a 95BFM podcast. Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labour MP Andrew Little.
This week I spoke to Little about his recent visit to the 20th Shangri-La Indo-Pacific Defence Dialogue in Singapore and his thoughts on the recently released review of Aotearoa's intelligence laws. I started by asking how the Shangri-La Dialogue was and what his focus was on during the summit.
The summit was excellent. It's quite a big deal. The defence ministers of the Asia-Pacific sort of region, so about 40 ministers, led by the Singapore defence minister, Dr. Ng. But it's an opportunity for us all to come together. There's formal sort of presentations and seminars and discussions, and then there's the informal opportunities to catch up. So I had the opportunity to catch up with some counterparts in countries as diverse as Singapore and Timor-Leste, Australia, the United States, Canada, UK, Malaysia, and a few others. So it was good. It was good to see some informal discussions going on between the respective US and China defence representatives who were there. My principal aim or role there was participating in the panel discussion, really just putting New Zealand's position on nuclear disarmament and the importance of that, and I would argue the growing importance of that given current sort of rising tensions. And it was good to be able to do that. It was well received. It got a lot of support there. And then good just to exchange or sort of compare notes with other countries on how they see the current situation going.
In your speech at Shangri-La, you highlighted the increase around nuclear weapons in the Indo-Pacific region. What do you think is driving this increased risk?
Yeah, I think, I mean, a lot of countries are increasing their military spend and certainly the sort of conventional arms. There is also the increase in nuclear armaments too. We know China is, but North Korea, I think, is driving a lot of it. North Korea is determined to be a nuclear-armed state, so they're putting a lot into developing their weapons. But even the existing nuclear-armed states in that area, Pakistan and India, is alongside China, they are maintaining their nuclear capability too. I think, as we're seeing, there is more contest over, but particularly some of the islands in the South China Sea and the East China Sea, and claims of territory and claims of rights in some of the sea space around there. That's increasing tension. It's leading to an increase in spending on defence capability by various countries too. So there is just that general rising in the diplomatic temperature, if you like, that I think sits behind all of this.
Moving on to one of the other things to come out of this summit was a statement of intent on defence cooperation that you signed with the Japanese Minister of Defence. What does this new statement cover?
So it's mainly basically an agreement to work together and talk about how we can do more together as two countries. The principal focus in the outset is on humanitarian assistance and disaster relief, and mainly in the Pacific area. Japan is building their capabilities in this particular area. I mean, they face the same climate change-driven weather events that we do. They want to improve their capacity to provide humanitarian assistance. They want to work with us in the work that we do in the Pacific. So that will be useful. The agreement is respectful of the Pacific Islands Forum and their ambition about what is they describe as the Blue Pacific Continent, so respecting their aspirations and so on as well. So I think, look, all in all, it's a good little agreement that just brings together a commitment to work together in those particular areas.
Moving now on to the Tohumuru Intelligence Review that was released last month. The new report recommends a somewhat substantial overhaul of how intelligence services operate, how intelligence is collected and shared, and increased oversight of these agencies. What was your response to the report's recommendations?
Well, it's been to the Intelligence and Security Committee, which is a sort of a statutory committee of Parliament, and so all parties or most parties are represented on it. So they've had a first look at it. There's now some work to go into what of the recommendations we pick up. I think its focus was more on, because it was a review of the Intelligence and Security Act, which is the legislation that covers our two intelligence agencies, its focus was on more on oversight and then some of the powers that the agencies have. So a suggestion that instead of having two types of warrant to do various activities, you just break that down to one. And I think it was particularly focused, as you've indicated, on the oversight arrangements, particularly the committee. So, look, there's some further consideration to go into what of the recommendations are picked up, and that work is underway now. I think of the oversight things, I mean, certainly the point I've made to the Prime Minister and others, is that as the Minister responsible for the agencies, I also sit on that statutory select committee, so I'm both kind of overseeing the agencies I'm responsible for and then and politically answerable for them. That's not the way any other select committee in Parliament works. Cabinet ministers don't sit on select committees in the rest of Parliament, and I'm personally uncomfortable with the fact that I sit on that committee. So my expectation is that at least will change at some point in the future.
One of the focuses was definitely on oversight and transparency. The current lack of a clear definition of the agency's obligations, and the parliamentary intelligence and security community being too connected with the executive branch and lacking power. Would you want to see an overhaul around the oversight of these agencies from the legislative branch?
I think it's important for public confidence. I mean, I think one of the main bodies that oversees the agencies, bearing in mind that the agencies work largely in secret, is the Inspector General of Intelligence and Security. And credit to the previous government, they beefed up that office, that role. It used to be sort of a half-time retired judge and an assistant was what the Inspector General constituted. Now it's an office of about 9 people. There's an Inspector General, a Deputy Inspector General, they're well-resourced, and they basically have the power to look at anything the agencies do. So that's a good level of oversight. But in terms of political responsibility, I think we do have to have a look at that. The reviewers who looked at it looked at the UK and Canadian models and saw that there were, backbench MPs who go onto the committees and there's no cabinet ministers. But in those systems, their parliaments are much bigger and they tend to have MPs who have, whether in opposition or in government, a level of seniority that is suited to oversight of intelligence agencies in a way that we just don't have here because our parliament is much smaller. But look, that's a point of debate and that's one of the issues that's going to be considered in the follow-up work that now happens.
How much of the intelligence services activities and operations are shared with members of the legislative and executive branch?
Yeah, well, there's two things. There's a statutory obligation on the agencies to, I can't remember what the language is, but at least to be in contact with the leader of the opposition. And I know when I was leader of the opposition, I had regular meetings with the heads of the agencies as they sort of gave me briefings on security issues of the day. It's an important part of my job as minister to make sure that the current leader of the opposition is getting those briefings, and I know that is happening. The other thing is that one of the changes that Jacinda Ardern made as Prime Minister is to make sure that the committee doesn't just sort of look at the annual report of the agencies, but actually convenes more often and has substantive briefings on kind of priority issues of the time. So the agency heads are coming and briefing the ministers on the committee as well as the opposition MPs on the committee on whatever the issues are, whether it's terrorism or foreign interference or influence, those sorts of things. And so everybody gets those briefings at the same time. And I think that it's important because we don't want national security issues to become political footballs. And I think everybody appreciates the fact that there's a reasonably high degree of information sharing across the political spectrum.
That was Labour MP Andrew Little on the Shangri-La Defence Summit and reviews into intelligence laws.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.